You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 301. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 301. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Our website is eslpod.com. On it, you can visit our ESL podcast store, which has some additional premium courses in business and daily English that you will enjoy, I think. You can also download the learning guide for this episode and every current episode. The learning guide contains lots of additional information, including a complete transcript of this episode, vocabulary words, definitions, sample sentences, cultural notes, and a comprehension quiz on what you're listening to now. On this cafe, we're going to have another one of our Ask an American segments, where we listen to other native speakers talking at a normal rate of speech, a normal speed. We're going to listen to them and explain what they're talking about. Today, we're going to talk about churches in the United States, but somewhat unusual focus, we're going to look at the economic or possible economic value of churches. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Our topic on this cafe's Ask an American segment is the value of the services that churches provide the local community. We're going to listen to some people talking about a recent study, a recent piece of research that was done at the University of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is in the northeastern part of the United States. Researchers tried to put a price on the services that are provided in a community by churches and other religious groups. The study tried to determine the monetary or financial value of those services. Of course, many people think this is a strange idea, but it's an interesting way of looking at how churches contribute to society. In the United States, the majority of people are believers in God, and many of them are part of some religious organization or a church. So it's important to understand a little bit about how churches function in the United States. They don't just provide psychological or spiritual help. They also provide other kinds of assistance. We're going to start by listening to Bob Yeager, who worked on this particular research study. We'll listen to him, try to understand what he's saying, and then go back and explain it. Let's listen.
All too often right now, when we invest in neighborhoods, the church or synagogue is overlooked. We just assume it's going to always be there. We don't fully understand what value it has. If a pastor persuades someone not to commit suicide, what is the value of a human life? What's the dollar value? How many millions of dollars?
Bob begins by saying that all too often, or too frequently, when we invest in neighborhoods, the church or synagogue is overlooked. To invest, invest, normally means to put money into something, something that you hope will make you more money later. You might invest in a house. You might invest in buying stocks from a company. However, invest can also be more generally used to mean to put money into something so that eventually things get better in an area or in a community. We might say, for example, that the government is investing money in building roads, good roads, because that will help the community eventually. What Yeager says here, our friend Bob, is that when we invest in neighborhoods are the places where people live, the areas of town. Most cities have several different neighborhoods. When we invest in neighborhoods, the church or synagogue is overlooked. A church is normally a word we associate with a place where Christians worship, Christians pray. The word church can also refer to all of the people who are present there, or all of the members of that particular religious organization. A synagogue is a building where Jewish people go to pray and worship. A mosque would be a place where Muslim believers go and pray. The typical community in the United States has churches. Many have synagogues. More and more now, there are communities with mosques. This was a study done in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, which is a city in Pennsylvania, and they looked at churches and synagogues. The author of the study, our good friend Bob, says that the church or the synagogue is overlooked. To overlook something means not to notice it or not to realize how important it is. You don't want to overlook bringing sunscreen if you are going to be out in the sun or on the beach. Sunscreen is something you put on your skin to protect it, so it doesn't get burned. You don't want to overlook that. Bob says that we just assume that the church and synagogue is gonna always be there. Gonna, usually spelled G-O-N-N-A, is a short form of going to. It's an informal form. You will hear when people are speaking. It's not something you see in writing very often, unless it's a dialogue or a quote like this. Bob says that we assume these churches and synagogues are going to always be there. We don't fully or completely understand what value it has. The value, V-A-L-U-E, of something is how much it is worth or how much someone would pay for that. Sometimes it's easy to identify the value of some things, especially physical objects, a phone, a computer, a microphone. Other things are more difficult to put a value on. That is to say, how much money that's worth. Bob gives us an example. He says, if a pastor persuades someone not to commit suicide, what is the value of a human life? He starts by talking about a pastor, P-A-S-T-O-R. In this context, a pastor is the spiritual leader of a particular Christian church. Some churches call their leaders ministers, others call them priests, others call them pastors. We're talking about the same person here. He says, if a pastor persuades or convinces someone not to commit suicide, what is the value of that human life? To commit suicide means to kill yourself, to end your own life, something someone may do if they're very depressed or have psychological problems. People who have a lot of psychological problems or are very depressed will often go and talk to one of these religious leaders, these pastors, and sometimes the pastor will persuade them, convince them that this is not a good idea. Bob asks, what is the dollar value of that? How much is that worth? How much is that service worth to the community? He says, how many millions of dollars? Actually, the study found that it was worth about $20,000. I'm not sure exactly how they calculated that. And of course, many people think that trying to say how much a life is worth is not a very good way of analyzing something, talking about something. But this is a study done by people interested in economics, and sometimes they put values on things that we may not put a value on. In any case, let's listen to Bob again talk about these churches and synagogues and the value they bring to their communities.
All too often right now, when we invest in neighborhoods, the church or synagogue is overlooked. We just assume it's going to always be there. We don't fully understand what value it has. If a pastor persuades someone not to commit suicide, what is the value of a human life? What's the dollar value? How many millions of dollars?
In the next section, Bob talks about the effect that these churches and synagogues have on their community. He uses the word halo, H-A-L-O, which is normally a circle of light that we associate in artwork with a saint or with an angel. Normally with angels, we talk about them having a halo, like a round circle of light above their head. It could also be used, as it is here, to describe the good influence that something has on the people or things around them. Let's listen.
We thought there probably would be some evidence that in a halo of a block or two or more, you know, in that kind of circle around a sacred place, there is probably some impact that's demonstrable. And what we've learned, in fact, is that much of this impact is local.
So Bob, or Bobby, as I like to call him, because I consider Bob a friend of mine. Bobby says, we thought there probably would be some evidence that in a halo of a block or two or more, and then he continues, but let's talk about that first phrase. We thought there would probably be some evidence, some proof or indication that in a halo of a block or two or more, a halo, as we described, has to do with the influence, the good influence that might come from someone or something that is good. And here we're talking about the influence around the church or the synagogue. He says a block or two, but he really, I think, just means in the local area where the church or synagogue is. He goes on to say, you know, in that kind of circle around a sacred place. Sacred means holy, similar to or like God. So the sacred places would be the churches and the synagogues in the neighborhood. He says there is probably some impact that is demonstrable. Impact would be effect or influence. Demonstrable means something that you can see, something that you can show, something that you can prove. It comes from the word demonstrate, demonstrable. The fact that water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit is demonstrable. I can show you. You can see the water becoming ice. Well, this is a study to see if the impact or the effect of churches and synagogues is demonstrable, if we can actually show it. And he says that, in fact, you can. He says that much of what we've learned is that much of this impact is local. Local meaning in the nearby area, in the area around these churches and synagogues. So it's not going to be global. It's not going to be across the whole world. It's not going to be nationwide across the whole country. It's not going to be statewide across the whole state. It's going to be local, in the neighborhood, the city, or town. Let's listen to Bobby, one more time.
We thought there probably would be some evidence that in a halo of a block or two or more, you know, in that kind of circle around a sacred place, there is probably some impact that's demonstrable. And what we've learned, in fact, is that much of this impact is local.
It's not difficult in most communities, most neighborhoods, to see the influence, the positive influence of churches and synagogues on the social and economic life of the people who live there. Churches often in the United States have hospitals, schools, clinics, special programs, educational programs, health programs, and so forth that they use to help the people who live in the areas where they're located. The government, of course, also provides many of these services, but they cannot or do not provide all of them, and a significant percentage in the United States anyway of these, what we might call social services, are provided by local churches, synagogues, and mosques. Now let's answer a few of your questions. Our first question comes from Husam, H-O-U-S-A-M, in Libya. The question has to do with the difference between two similar sounding expressions, outbreak and breakout. They sound almost the same. Outbreak, O-U-T-B-R-E-A-K, one word, is when there is a sudden increase in something, usually a disease or some violent activity, or it could be certain insects or animals that are attacking food. For example, we might talk about an outbreak of influenza or the flu when lots of people start getting sick suddenly. We could talk about an outbreak of war or an outbreak of violence. A sudden, rapid increase. Breakout is two words. It has a couple of different meanings. One of them is similar to outbreak. It can mean to happen or increase suddenly. Here, breakout can be used as a verb to mean something similar to outbreak, which is a noun. So we might say, when influenza broke out at the school, it had to close because all of the students were sick. Breakout is a verb here, meaning the same as outbreak. Or we could say, war broke out between the two countries. War started between the two countries. Breakout, again, as a verb, can also mean to escape from prison. The criminal broke out of the county jail, of the local jail or prison. As an adjective, breakout is sometimes used now to talk about an artist, a singer, or an actor who suddenly becomes very popular. The breakout singer of the year, Justin Bieber, or someone like that. Is that his name? Bieber? Justin? Yeah, Justin Bieber. That's his name. Whoever he is. Finally, breakout can also be used to talk about when you have what is called acne on your skin. Acne, A-C-N-E, is when you have small red spots that appear on your skin. It's something that happens very commonly among teenagers. We call those small red spots pimples. P-I-M-P-L-E-S. One expression you might hear with breakout is to break out of your routine. Here the idea is that your routine is like a prison. You need to do something different. You need to break out of what you normally do every day. Your routine, R-O-U-T-I-N-E, are the things you normally do, or the sequence, the order in which you normally do something. Most people, when they get up in the morning, they have a routine. They may go and exercise and then take a shower. They may read the paper while eating breakfast. They may watch the television while getting dressed. Those are routines that different people have. My routine is to get up and to eat and read my newspaper. That's part of my morning routine. Our next question comes from Surya, S-U-R-Y-A, in India. The question has to do with three similar sounding expressions. These are all phrasal verbs with the verb to pull off, to pull over, and to pull in. Well, each of these expressions is slightly different. Let's start with to pull off. To pull off is usually used when talking about a car driving down a street and you need to stop. We would say, I'm going to pull off the road. The idea is you're going to stop somewhere safe, somewhere that is completely off of the road itself. It could be the land next to the road. It could be a place where you get gasoline, anywhere that is not on the road or highway. Or you might say, I need gas. And if you're driving on the freeway, you may decide to pull off at the next exit, to leave the freeway, the highway, and go to the gas station. To pull off can also mean to do something very difficult successfully. I didn't think the singer could pull off that song. It's a very difficult song, and yet he managed to sing it very well. To pull over can also mean to move your car to the side of the road so that other cars can go around you. However, normally to pull over is something that you would do for a short period of time. Maybe you're lost and you pull over to look at a map. To pull off means to leave the road. To pull over usually means that you're still on the road and that you're probably just there temporarily. If you are driving down the road and you see a police officer behind you, the officer might tell you to pull over, to stop your car on the side of the road. To pull in means, again, talking about cars and driving, to drive your car slowly into a parking place, a parking spot, we would call it, in a garage or in some other narrow space where you have to put your car into. My house, for example, has a driveway, a place for the car to go between the street and the garage. Sometimes I don't put the car in the garage. I just pull it in to the driveway. I drive it slowly and I park it there. So when we're talking about driving, to pull in means to go into a parking space. Finally, Farzane, F-A-R-Z-A-N-E, from an unknown country, a mystery country, wants to know the meaning of the expression, stop acting silly. Well, to act here means to behave in a certain way. To act like or to act as means that you are behaving as if you were something else. You're acting like my father. That means you are behaving and saying things that my father might say to me. To act silly would mean to be foolish, to be stupid, to make dumb mistakes. That's to be silly, or silly can just be a word to describe someone who is acting like a child, an adult. So stop acting silly means stop behaving in this foolish way. It's something we may say to children, but it may be something you would say to an adult who you think is not thinking very clearly or logically, who doesn't have very much common sense or good judgment. When I was growing up, we used to say, act your age, not your shoe size. Act your age means if you are 10 or 12, you should act like a 10 or a 12-year-old, not like a 4-year-old. If you are 85 years old, you should act like an 85-year-old, not like a 20-year-old. Or at least, you shouldn't be asking 20-year-old women to go on a date with you. If you act your shoe size, well, in the United States, shoe sizes are usually numbers like 8 or 9, 5, maybe 10. They're low numbers. And that would be to act like a child. So we have the expression, act your age, not your shoe size. I promise I won't act silly if you email us a question or comment. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2011 by the Center for Educational Development.